Okay, I'm not sure exactly what we're supposed to be doing, but it definitely includes, yeah.
Never mind.
Testing, 1, 2, 3?
Yeah,
it doesn't work. Right? We should put it on. Put it on. I guess it does work. Yeah?
Not that Rebbe's voice needs magnification.
No. Why would it, right? Okay. Yeah. So this week's Parsha, we always start with... yeah. So I was asked to say a few words about reminiscence and assessment, I guess, of Mori Virabi Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal. It's difficult to be in Yeshivat Haaretzion, you know, and not reflect upon Rav Lichtenstein's persona and his legacy. And I'm happy to share some impressions, of course. And if there's time, I'm happy to also open up the questions, whether about that or other things. We'll try to do that. We have till what time? 7:15?
It's Marv, yeah.
7:15 is Marv upstairs?
In the basement. We could dive in here.
No. Like old times, right?
Like old times.
Yeah, we'll do Heicha Kedusha for Marav. Okay, so I'm happy to do that, as I say. And I think that, you know, Rav Lichtenstein would, maybe this says it all already, he would be very unhappy with me, if I just, broke right into, to the topic, to speak about him. I think on two levels, as he would have said it. Number one, on a personal level, when Rav Lichtenstein celebrated some birthdays and anniversaries, the yeshiva, Yeshivat Haaretzion, in other words, made different events in New York to commemorate that, and they were very kind to ask me, to come and to contribute and to say... Shiurim in honor of him in that time, which, as I say, I was very privileged to do. And he knew about it in advance, and he said to me, I heard that you're coming to give a shiur, and he approved it, obviously. And he said, but, try not to say too much about me personally. That was a very humble person, a part of his persona. YU also did an honor in his behalf, and I was able to give a shiur. I got the same instructions. Of course, I mostly ignored them, but the fact that the instructions were not perfunctory. But I think that the second element is related to the first element, and that is that if one wanted to characterize Rav Lichtenstein's greatness, one of the things that one would have to emphasize was his substantiveness, and the fact that he always framed, whatever he did, in a context of substance, of tochen. So the idea that one would just break into an assessment or reminiscences is something I think that was antithetical to part of his legacy and part of his persona. I try very much, I strive to be consistent as a very loyal Talmud and one who feels a tremendous sense of Hakaras HaTov for all that I benefited and for the relationship that I have and in my mind continue to have. Sivsosov Dovos Bekever, Dmus Dyupno, which I'll talk about a little bit later. So I also try to always frame whatever I do in Tochen. So say something about the Parsha for a minute, just to frame the rest of it. So this week's, last week's Parsha was Parsha Svayachid. Do we have a Chumash somewhere? No. Do we? It's on the computer, right? Oh, okay. I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, it's good that something isn't on the computer. On the other hand, I feel a little bit badly for the Torah Shabbal Peh. Oh, we had the Gemara, so just the Gemara. So last week's Parsha was Parsha Svayachid. And... that, of course, is the end of Sefer Bereishis. And one of the striking things about that parsha is, again, trying to spend so much time on this, but is the oscillation back and forth in the psukim between the Torah's description between the rather the last kind of legacy that is conveyed or articulated by Yaakov Avinu before his death, between the identification of Yaakov and Yisrael. It's very blatant. You can't miss it if you tried. Just most people don't really focus on it so much. It's back and forth, and it is often, you know, one pasuk, you know, next to the other, or even sometimes in the same pasuk, sometimes in a very surprising way, and sometimes, as I'll explain what I think the criterion is in a minute, and sometimes in anticipated ways. But even from the very beginning, Vayichi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shvasrei Shana, Vayichi Yimei Yaakov Shnei Chayav Sheva Shanim Arvaim Mas Shana, and then Vayikruvu Yimei Yisrael Lamus, Vayikra Livno Liyosef Vayomer, Simna Yadcha Tachas Yurechi. It's a very shocking thing. Yaakov and Yosef had an extraordinary relationship already when he was a very young man, Ben Zakunim Hulo, right? Part of the problem was that, you know, Yaakov was not sufficiently strategic about his special feelings to Yosef, and that triggered jealousy. And yet, then that's a relationship that resumes at the end of his life. Labalaturim, I don't usually quote gematrias, but this is a particularly good one, and for Balaturim, although he has a lot of gematrias, on the pasuk Vayichi, on the word Vayichi, says that Vayichi is 34. Is that really true? Yeah? Sounds right? I never check up on the Balaturim. And 34, he says, is the amount of years that Yaakov and Yosef spent together. 17 before, you know, he went missing, and 17 after they were reunited. As if to say the chius of Yaakov was through his relationship with Yosef. It's a very beautiful idea. The point is that he has this extraordinary relationship, and of course Yosef is the person that he's, you know, addressing right before he dies to make sure, to secure the ultimate legacy of Kavura and Eretz Yisrael. And yet, he binds him to this obligation, he feels he needs to bind him to this obligation, not only as Yaakov, the first two psukim are Yaakov, by Yikruvu Yisrael Lamus, by Yikruvu Livno Liyosef, unnecessary, we know the Yosef is his son, right? And he says, and then you get formal language, Imna Matasi Chein Veinecha, Simna Yadcha Tachas Yurechi, Ashvua Benekitas Chefetz, V'asisa Imadi Chesed Be'emes, Al Nasek Bereni V'mitzrayim, Shachavti Imavosai, Sani Mitzrayim, Kvartani V'kvura San, Vayomar Anochi Asek Kedvarecha. And even that's not enough. Vayomer Hishavali, Vayishavalo, Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh Hamita. Meaning, this already sets the tone. Yaakov leaves the scene, you know, in two levels, or two dinim, you could say. One is as the father of children and grandchildren, and a person who had an intense relationship, you know, with that nuclear family. A particularly special kesher with Yosef, so that his chiyus is through his time with Yosef. And at the same time, he's also Yisrael, and he has a responsibility to Klal Yisrael Dori Doros. And as such, even though of course he trusts Yosef, that's the reason that he calls him, it seems from a personal vantage point insulting, you know, to have to make a shvua b'nikitas chefetz and to have him, you know, to repeat it and to use formal, you know, language, almost like you're writing a lawyer's letter, you know, lo aleinu, you know, to in order to implement this agreement between them. But he doesn't have any other choice because he knows that he has responsibilities, l'dore doros, to Klal Yisrael. But that's who Yaakov Avinu was. He's a person whose name got changed. But unlike Avraham Avinu, right, who was Avram and then became Avraham, and the Gemara tells us in Masechet Brachos, you're not supposed to ever call Abraham Avram again, right? It was a clear trajectory. But Yaakov, Yisrael, even when he came to Yisrael, he remained Yaakov. He was both. Ki sarisa im alokim ve'im ha'anashim v'tuchal already establishes that Yaakov Avinu was multifaceted. He was Tiferes. He was a multidimensional figure. That's part of what made him the Bechir Ha'avos. And as such, he also retained, you know, his Yaakov persona alongside his Yisrael persona. And there's a lot that could be said about this. I'm not going to, I don't want to spend more time than I need to on this. But the truth is that this is what we find throughout the parsha. The next part of the parsha is, Vayhi achar dvar meilav yomer leYosef, hinei avicha choleh. Vayikach shnei banav imos, Menashe ve'Ephraim. He brings Ephraim and Menashe for a special bracha. Vayaged liYaakov, vayomer, hinei bincha, again, bincha Yosef bo'ilecha. So it's again, vayischazek Yisrael, vayeshev alamita. Vayomer Yaakov al Yosef. It's going back and forth, right? He's telling vayivarech osi. He's telling the story. And then, of course, atav, shnei banachan oladim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim, ad bo'i elecha Mitzrayim alihem. What he's going to do now is he's going to give a special bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, and he's going to expand the configuration of the Shvatim, so that they represent two Shvatim. That's a Dori Doris legacy for Klal Yisrael. And this is being done in the name of Yisrael. Vayar Yisrael is b'nei Yosef, but then he says, he sees them, and he says, mi'ela. And Chazal say that, you know, he saw that, you know, the future progeny, you know, there might be some issues and some problems. I mean, these are his grandchildren, and but the task in front of him is now a Klal Yisrael task, and therefore, you know, he needs to be very careful. I mean, he says, who are these people? Vayomer Yosef al aviv, banayhem, asher nasan li elokim bazeh. They're my children, they're your grandchildren. Vayomer kacham lo elai v'aren, you know the story. Einei Yisrael kavdu mizokem. The Yisrael persona isn't clear what should be done here. Lo yuchal leros v'yas osam. V'yigash osam elav. V'yishaklem v'yichabeklem. He's both grandfather and, you know, and Yisrael of the nation at the same time. V'yomer Yisrael, you'll say, for opanecha lo pilalti. Hinei erosi elokim gam v'sarecha. Etc. And then, you know, v'yikach ha-shneihem, as Ephraim b'mino mitzvah Yisrael. Es Menashe b'smelo b'min Yisrael, v'yasei lav, v'yishlach Yisrael es yimino, v'yashas al rosh Ephraim, v'hu tzair, smelo al rosh Manasseh, sikel es yadav, ki Menashe ha-bechor. And then Yosef is unhappy, right? Yaakov gives him the bracha of Avraham Avinu, right? And so on. And basically, Yosef is upset. V'yar Yosef ki yashis aviv, yad yimino rosh Ephraim, v'yira b'inav, v'yitmoche ad aviv l'asir oso me'al rosh Ephraim, or rosh Menashe. Vayomer Yosef el Aviv, lo chein Avi. Getting Aviv, Avi, Bini, right? So the Akedah again. It's very personal. Ki ze bechor sim yimincha al resho. Vayamein Aviv. Even as a father, because in the end of the day, and this is the point I want to make, he's able to merge these two things. Vayomer Yadati Bini, Yadati, gam hu yel'am, gam hu yigdal, v'ulam achiv hakatan yigdal mimenu v'zaro yem alo hagoyim. Vayivarchem bayomahu leymar, b'cha yivarech Yisrael leymar, yisimcha lefrim kefraim b'chen Menashe, vayosem is Ephraim b'fnei Menashe, vayomer Yisrael Yosef, and so on, etc. Meaning, on the one hand, he has these two grandchildren. His son Yosef is telling him, you know, from a fatherly and grandfatherly point of view, what you're doing here is wrong. And his answer to him is, you know, I'm going to do both at the same time. Sikel et yadav, you know, kim minashe abchor. And then, of course, you have the last one, which is Vayikra el Yaakov el Banav, Vayomer Heyasuva Gidalachem, Esa Sheikra Aschem Bachris Hayamim, Ikav Tzuv Shimu Bnei Yaakov, Vishimu El Yisrael Avichem, in the same pasuk. And then, of course, this is the last will and testament, his assessment of his children, which is a dual assessment. You know, it's each one of them is an individual based on the assessment of a father, his understanding of the life that they have already lived and the characteristics that they have already exhibited. But of course, what's important about all this, and Chazal have all these beautiful, you know, comments about, you know, being Megalos HaKeitz and not being Megalos HaKeitz. What's important about all this is the, you know, the configuration of the Shvatim going forward. And you can't divorce them from each other completely. In the end of the psukim, right, we're told that you know, Yaakov says to all the children that ish kibir chaso asher berach osam. Basically, he tells each one of them that you have your bracha, and that, you know, that bracha stands you in good stead. That's the bracha that you are supposed to be receiving. And at the same time, he tells them that the brachos that are given to each individual one of you are brachos that apply to each and every one of you. Kol Ela Shiftei Yisrael, Shnei Masar, Vezos Asher Diber Lahem Avihem, Vayvarech Hasam, Ish Asher Kibirchaso, Berachosam. That's what Chazal say, and it means the brachos are individual, and the brachos of each individual belong to the totality of Klal Yisrael. This was the unique feature of Yaakov Avinu. That's why, one of the reasons it was so, in my opinion, difficult for Yosef to forgive his brothers, or you know, to give them a blanket, you know, mechila anyway, according to some of Farshim, he never fully forgave them, is because he wasn't the bailim on their mechila. If you look carefully, the term Yisrael is absent from the parsha, from the Torah, from the time that Yosef is missing, and Yaakov goes into a deep avelus, until he knows not only that it's Yosef is alive, but that it's the same Yosef who is alive. With one exception, the decision to send Binyamin, which is the only time when Yaakov is able to kind of extricate himself from avelus and become take a national destiny decision, there he's talked about as Yisrael. Otherwise, the term Yisrael disappears. Once Yaakov knows Yosef is alive and that it's the same Yosef, according to the way Chazal understood it, it's Vayichi Ruach, Vatchi Ruach Yaakov, and the next pasuk it's Vayomer Yisrael, and Yisrael's back. The phrase or the term Yisrael is a crucial, crucial term. But at the same time, as I said, Yaakov Avinu not only doesn't disappear, but you get this constant oscillation between them. One could argue that, as I said before, what's unique about Yaakov Avinu, the Bechir Ha'avos, Tiferes, Yisrael, is precisely the fact that he has this capacity, right, to be Yaakov and Yisrael at the same time, to blend his personal life together with his legacy, destiny, national persona. Sometimes, you know, he speaks in one voice and sometimes in the others, but never in a compartmentalized or contradictory or schizophrenic, you know, kind of a way. It's always, he might be emphasizing this aspect, he might be emphasizing that. If you look carefully in the psukim, that's what I referred to before. Sometimes even in the parts which seem to be very personal, family-oriented, things about his individual relationships, he's still able to muster Yisrael. And sometimes the opposite. Sometimes where we would expect a full, unexpurgated Yisrael, what we have, you know, surprisingly, is Yaakov. And the reason for that is because even though he's acutely aware of the obligations of these personas, part of his greatness is his consistency, his capacity to integrate, to be Tiferes, to blend in a splendid way, not only the midos of Avraham and Yitzchak, the chesed and the gevura, but also the personal and the national. I think it's not a coincidence that the list of those who went to Mitzrayim, which is enumerated in the end of Vayichi, is repeated in the beginning of this coming week's parsha, the beginning of Shemos. Right? And again, it's not like you could forget the names so quickly. It seems superfluous, but Bereishis, of course, is the sefer that focuses on individuals and the patriarchs, meaning the avos and the imahos. And Shemos is about the national destiny of Klal Yisrael. And the Torah's, you know, repetition is a way of saying that, you know, there are two dinim, but there's continuity between those two dinim. Elu Shev Shemos ben Yisrael haba'im Mitzrayim. Some of the Mefarshim say that the ba'im is hoveh. It's as if they just came, even though they've been there for a while. The sense of the way that they're coming and the values that they bring is critical, and none more critical than the Dmus Diukno of Yaakov Avinu. The concept of Dmus Diukno, of an image that continues to inspire, is a concept that we know from Yaakov Avinu, right? Chazal say that Yosef, you know, at a particularly critical juncture in his life, you know, where, of course, he's, you know, tempted and weighing, you know, a decision to do something that will have consequences for his trajectory. But it isn't just that action. It's, again, it's a trajectory. It's a question of what his legacy is going to be and what kind of destiny he's going to have. At that moment, Chazal tell us that it's Dmus Dyukno Shel Abba that appears. It's Yaakov Avinu. We're also told that Yaakov Avinu Lo Meis, right? A strange statement of Chazal, but one that they say about Yaakov Avinu especially and particularly. Some of the Mefarshim say this is not a mystical idea. The idea of Yaakov Avinu Lo Meis is the idea that he had children and he had Talmidim. And Dmus Dyukno, you know, continued to be influential. And therefore, of course, you know, even if he physically died, the idea is that he was a living, continuous living presence. And that is really what every one of the Chachmei Masorah is supposed to be. He's supposed to be somebody who operates on multiple levels with integrity according to the demands of those different requirements, but also who knows how to integrate those things, how to be consistent, know how to, you know, weigh and how to specialize, but at the same time in a way that is consistent and is more, you know, than the sum of its parts. And he's supposed to be somebody whose impact continues, both on the smaller concentric circle of his nuclear family and the relationships going out from there that he had with individuals, but Sifsosov, Dovos Bekeber, but also somebody who whose teachings and, you know, whose persona, including that capacity to do those kind of things, to live that kind of a shilub, is something that he passes on as well. And I think this is true for all Chachmei Masorah. There aren't so many Chachmei Masorah in every generation, what we call Chachmei Masorah. People that we think, you know, are paradigms of integrity and Yirat Shamayim and Limud HaTorah, you know, but also people whose greatness extends to their consistency and their integrity. People who, you know, you point to and you say, Kazeh re'e v'kadesh, you know, not that you want to imitate them or be clones of them, but that you want to be inspired by. And also, you know, Maisa avos simin labanim, you want to, you know, study their persona in order to gain direction, you know, living in a complex world about priorities and about foundational values, etc. And Yeshivat Har Etzion is, you know, was extremely privileged, you know, to have, you know, Mori V'Rabbi Ravaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, you know, in its midst, together with Rav Mital. Speaking about Rav Lichtenstein today, but Rav Mital, very wonderful person, and also somebody who left an incredible legacy. But these are people, Lichtenstein will focus on today, whose ability, you know, to be consistent, to be honest, you know, to juggle a lot of different responsibilities and sensibilities, you know, but to do that in a way, not that you couldn't disagree with now and then, that no person whose decisions or, you know, nobody is infallible except for the Rabbanu Shel Olam, but people who really rise to the occasion and have that, you know, kind of special impact, you know, on their children. I was very struck at the Hespedim, the reactions to some of the Hespedim right in the aftermath of Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal's Patira, you know, that a lot of people told me that they were very surprised to hear some of the stories about how family-centered and family-oriented, you know, he was. You know, this idea that, you know, somebody is a big Talmud Chacham and a big Masmid and somebody who is extremely dedicated to the klal, to the tzibur, and you know, as almost like a legend, you know, in the extent of that, you know, effort and immersion and that part of his responsibility, you know, that he such a person would have time for family, you know, and the nitty gritty part, you know, the you know, the parts that that highlight, you know, the personal and the individual. And frankly, I was shocked that people were shocked, because I think that anybody who really had any serious contact with and relationship with Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal, you know, it was, I think, very obvious that he, part of his greatness was his honoring of what I call the concentric circles. I mean, the different relationships that people have with different groups, and understanding that there's a certain integrity to that, and that you don't skip steps, that, you know, life and Kedusha certainly begins with the people who are you're closest to, you know, and from there it radiates out in a very consistent manner, you know, to the other populations. It couldn't be otherwise. That's part of the story of Yaakov and Yisrael. And this is true for Rav Lichtenstein, not only in his very special relationship with his family, which I'm not going to speak about, that's for family members to discuss, but that part of it is certainly obvious to me at all points, but also relationship with Talmidim. He had relationship with the whole yeshiva, Yeshivat Har Etzion, and with the larger community, especially, you know, you can call it the, the, you know, Dati Lumi community of Israel, and the, you know, Torumada, YU, whatever you want to call it, community of America. Certainly he was a very prominent and very influential person in that community. He identified very strongly and unequivocally. Doesn't mean he didn't have a lot of criticism. He had very important and constructive criticism of those communities, not of their philosophy and ideology, but of consistent implementation and the aspirations, but definitely identified very strongly. But as such, again, it didn't skip steps. It began with his family, and from there, to Vishinanta Navanecha, Banecha Talmidecha, the people who, you know, who sat in, you know, in his shiurim, and who continued relationships with him for many years. But Lichtenstein Zatzal was not always the easiest person to approach, to be honest. People had great deal of reverence and respect for him, didn't want to really waste his time, and, you know, he wasn't a person who, you know, embraced people in a physical way, and, you know, you had to push a little bit, you know, to approach him. But that was from the part of Talmidim. He himself had a great interest and was very approachable. We didn't want to waste his time, but he didn't consider it to be a waste of time. And again, on a personal level, I can say that he was always extraordinarily generous with me whenever I asked, and always, you know, provided opportunities and access and encouragement. And this is true of other. I know that some of the people, some of the Talmidim here, are children of Talmidim, and I know some of the relationships that were very warm, and that's something that was greatly respected. That's part of the Yaakov Yisrael part of Chachmei Mesorah, that Rav Lichtenstein was fully committed to. In assessing his approach, I was asked, when we were talking upstairs with some of the smaller groups, you know, about Derech HaLimud questions. It's my opinion that Rav Lichtenstein's accent in Derech HaLimud in certain things was very much an extension of his personality, intellectual personality, and also his spiritual Avodas Hashem personality. Somebody asked me, we were talking about an a priori approach to, you know, to learning, kind of mapping out or trying to anticipate or, you know, project, you know, where a topic might go, what the interrelationships might be. That was something that was very singular about Rav Lichtenstein's method of giving shiurim, and I think also about the way that his mind works. Again, he had, you know, the knowledge and the analytical skills, you know, to be able to do that, you know, in a very extraordinary way. He had a certain vision and sweep that was a result of many years of immersion and investment. He was an unbelievable masmid in addition to everything else. And, of course, his memory and his mind. But certainly, that was certainly part of the way that he gave shiur, and that was very singular, a methodological focus, and a very comprehensive focus on the broader sugya. And that in two senses. Number one, two senses, we'll stick to that for now. Number one, the fact that parallel sugyas are part of the sugya. I think I've mentioned this publicly before, but that was the norm among Magidei Shir, you know, of a certain advanced level. I was a little bit spoiled. I came to Yeshivat Har Etzion at age 16. My two rabbeim, you know, since the age of 16, were Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal and the Rav Zatzal. So in terms of quality and many other things, you know, it sometimes took me, you know, a while to understand that, you know, my own experience was not necessarily the norm, you know, even among Talmidim of other, you know, great people, of big Talmid Chachamim. I'm not talking about, you know, people who were exposed to more mediocre shiurim. But even among great Talmid Chachamim, these were very special. And again, it never occurred to me that everybody didn't include in the topic, you know, the wider topic. Even starting with the more obvious element, the parallel sugyas. Rav Lichtenstein's Mar Makomos always reflected, you know, the parallel sugyas, the parallel tosisin, parallel rishonim in other places. It's not the norm. I found this out in the Olam HaTorah. And certainly, even more than that, is that he had a certain sweep, again, and a certain vision of how things connect together that made not just, you know, you can look at the Mesoros HaShas, you know, and know that the same sugya appears in Sanhedrin or parts of it in Inksubis and in, you know, Sota and whatever, or Bava Kama. And then, okay, I mean, through hard work, you can look up the various Mefarshim there. It takes much, much longer. You're quadrupling or quintupling, you know, your efforts. And the idea that that's worth it, you know, for a more authentic and you know, a fuller picture, which I'll get back to in a minute, is something important. But at the end of the day, that's, you know, that's just more work. And it's obvious that some of that more work, you know, has geometric payoff in that, you know, once you've seen a certain amount about a topic, on the one hand, the more that you see after that, you have to weigh, to use a factor that Rav Lichtenstein himself, you know, like to reference quite often, at least in personal conversation, the law of diminishing returns. I mean, at one point, you know, it just doesn't pay to move on. But at the same time, because you have such a, you've invested so much in the topic that you're positioned to particularly benefit from, you know, nuances and other, you know, perspectives and positions that you wouldn't if you were just seeing it out of context or in a narrower fashion. That's number one. But the second one I'd say is this perspective of the relationship between other topics that don't appear in the Mesoros HaShas, that are a consequence of one's personal learning, but if you have a certain kind of mind, then even more so, a certain kind of you know, intense commitment to Avodas Hashem and to Limud HaTorah, you know, that from your point of view constitute parallels or contrasts or foils to a topic. So I remember, you know, very early on when I came to Yeshivat Har Etzion, the yeshiva was, I came in the end of January, and the yeshiva was learning Hamafkid at the time, and I guess the first Shir Klali that I was here for was on Einan Amakna Davar Shelo Bali Olam, and I just remember being very struck at not only the parallels, you know, the parallel sugyas, which are all over Shas, of course, but the parallels to other topics. You know, what is the idea? Futures, what are, you know, things that you don't control but you might anticipate. What is the status of that, you know, in other areas of halacha, when it's not called necessarily in the makna dabar, you know, shaloba liola. And that, as I say, requires a lot of knowledge, a great memory, a lot of knowledge, but especially a capacious kind of passion for, like, you know, leaving no stone unturned, you know, that might illuminate Dvar Hashem. And that, I think, is something that is very specifically the characteristic that where the Derech HaLimud really informs, you know, about the persona. I'll explain more in a minute. But a similar aspect of that, or a third aspect of that, was the pursuit, and I've spoken about this also in the past, of what I would call, you know, the more exotic Rishonim. Who don't write Alatar. It's harder to find them. You have to have Bekiyas in them, which also is something. The Balaitors and the Ravyas and the Ravans, you know, and the Reims. And to do that, you know, to have control of that, again, reflects a certain immense Bekiyas for sure. To have that, you know, without, you know, the responsa program where you can search it. Again, everybody in this room, you know, you know, has grown up in a learning environment where you can do that. Rav Lichtenstein didn't grow up in that environment and, to my knowledge, never really capitalized on that technology even once it came about. He didn't need to, but you just have to take a step back sometimes and think about it. I've obviously thought about it. What does it mean for someone to invest so much time to gain mastery, because looking it up each time or going through it more generally, like to know where these things are and to read them through to try to... I've done this, so I can tell you that it's a lot of investment and sometimes a huge payoff, but I'll explain in a minute from a certain perspective. But it's if you define payoff, you know, by in terms of efficiency... Like how much time you're putting in, and how much, you know, how many times you find an outstanding, illuminating shita, you know, then you might apply the rule of diminishing or the law of diminishing returns. So, what motivates someone to pursue, you know, that broader agenda? And I think the answer is, you know, there are overlapping parts of the answer, and I don't know whether any of this is something that Rav Lichtenstein would agree to. I certainly never asked him about it. I would have been curious, actually. I can tell you from my own point of view. I think, number one, that the world of brisk, which, of course, is the intellectual you know, foundation of Rav Lichtenstein's learning through the Rav, most particularly, and he definitely embraced that fully, you know, without hesitation. But the world of brisk can, you know, be pursued in a very narrow way. Brisk focuses on an inner logic. I'm not going to discuss this fully now, but an inner logic. It's very rigorous. It's not a coincidence, you know, that a lot of brisker distinctions kind of isolate and project, you know, a particular shita or issue as a special din. A special din in that. You could say it in Yiddish, you could say it in English, you could say it in Hebrew, you know, but, you know, this is it looks like that din, but it's something separate, a separate halos, it's a, et cetera. You could pursue the din of the world of brisk, which is intellectually very challenging, I think also very, mostly very satisfying, but you could pursue it in a very narrow way. And you can end up with reconstructed definitions and conclusions. But in the end of the day, you know, because there's a certain tendency, an orientation, almost like a default orientation, to see each topic as something separate and independent, it can end up narrowing, it can have the effect of narrowing, you know, the particular theme and the totality of your picture. And I think it doesn't have to be that way, obviously. I'm an unqualified enthusiast in terms of Brisk. But I think that for Rav Lichtenstein, one of the ways of kind of combating or negating or neutralizing that potential tendency and, you know, his own orientation for breadth and for understanding the interrelationships between things, you know, and making clear that we're trying to enrich our perspective. Something could be a separate din, a special din, not just the regular or another application of some other broader topic and theme, but to understand, you know, that not just, you know, to solve a problem, you know, but to have, you know, that as a part of the constellation, you know, of your galaxy of ideas that interact with each other. I think part of that was expressed in this broadening of topics, in this idea that, you know, the sugya in front of you has parallels, and the sugya in front of you and its parallels also need to kind of fit into, you know, broader, you know, themes and ideas. And as, you know, in terms of his own education and his own tendencies, which were very broad, as were the Rav's, I think that that is one of the ways that it expressed itself for him. And that expressed itself also in kind of breaking out from, Brisk typically focuses on, you know, Rambam for very good reasons, very conducive to it, Bali Tosis, Rashi. Brisk has never been known, and is still not known, you know, for a much wider, you know, treatment of the themes and of the topics. Certainly there's no value in Brisk, and even in the Rav's iteration of this, you know, of trying to identify, like, the major or all, certainly, you know, perspectives on a topic. Again, the Rav was very focused on whatever he wanted to say. Whatever he wanted to say was important. It could be, you know, broad, or it could be narrow, but that was his focus. He certainly never felt the obligation to present the totality of the views on a topic, etc. But Rav Lichtenstein did, and part of that was expressed in this broadening of the topic and putting it in context, and part of it was also in, you know, kind of moving away only from Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam, extending, you know, to the other Rishonim al Atar, and even more so to this whole other world, the Gaonim, the exotic Rishonim, looking more at the Yerushalmi and the Sifrei and the Sifra, etc. But I think overlapping with this attempt to broaden, which was intellectually and spiritually consistent with his orientation, was also an incredible, simply a thirst for Dvar Hashem that was unquenchable. And that, again, is where, you know, the Yira part and the Limud part, the, you know, the passion for Avodas Hashem, you know, and the intellectual capaciousness really meet together. Somebody who, I think Rav Lichtenstein his whole life, was extraordinary as, you know, somebody who remained a Talmud and remained fascinated, you know, bewitched in a way, you know, by Limud HaTorah, by its grandeur and by its, you know, its sweep. And that expressed in itself in his asmada, and in his, you know, he could return to the same topic again and again, you know, and you know, it found it endlessly stimulating. And part of that was a sense of, you know, anything that is Dvar Hashem is worth investing in and worth immersing in. Why should it be limited, you know, to the ones that were printed on the page, or even the ones that, for objective reason, you know, constitute, let's say, the higher rung, you know, in the hierarchy. If there are other Chachmei Mesorah who have something to say about a topic, our reverence, you know, the excitement of getting a window into their thinking, our reverence for them as Chachmei Mesorah, as well as the potential of expanding and enhancing through juxtaposition, through seeing one in the light of the other, the foils and the parallels, and sometimes both at the same time, All of that, you know, is well worth the effort. And therefore, it's almost like, you know, there was a certain, I think, not just desire to expand, but almost like, you know, being a compulsion. I don't mean it in a negative way, only in a positive way. A compulsion, you know, of this expansion. If the Itur or the Ravyo or the Ravan or the Ureim, you know, something interesting to say on the topic, A, it might, using my terminology now, echo or ripple across the system in other ways. And B, it expands our, you know, achduta maskil v'hamuskal, our ability to touch the transcendence that is represented by the Shaklavatarya of the Gemara and of the Chachmei HaMesorah with each other on a particular topic. For that reason, again, I think Rav Lichtenstein was particularly focused on Shaklavatarya's, you know, and on Havaminas. His, you know, methodological focus on, you know, breaking them down, you know, into assumptions, trying to understand, you know, which component, you know, remained, you know, if the Shita was rejected. Again, I think reflected his personal kind of intellectual style more generally, sort of kind of rigor and mathematical rigor, you know, as compared to the Rav, which I think was a little more free and more associative, bit of a different orientation. But in addition to that, it goes back to what I said a second ago, this sense of these are Chachmei Mesorah, you know, what every one of them thinks, you know, matters to us. We revere their perspectives, and they may be, you know, and they are by definition relevant to our lives as members of Klal Yisrael. And for that reason, you know, what they used to think or what they momentarily thought is important as well. It could be that, again, I'm projecting some of my own views. I'm certainly projecting my own views here, but I'm hopefully doing so in a way which I certainly feel is accurate of Rav Lichtenstein's, you know, perspective as well. So I think that the Derech HaLimud and the Derech of presentation, which, by the way, was not only in the Havayos Dabai of a Rava, but also in his presentations in matters of Hashkafa, you know, this thoroughness and this kind of leaving no stone unturned, this interest in a wider range of positions. It definitely had a lot to do with respect and reverence, you know, for authority figures, but also, again, for this idea of this kind of spiritual ambition, you know, of covering the range and understanding what that is. Also a certain respect for Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, to the idea that even if a position isn't normative, you know, the fact, you know, that it is articulated by an authority figure, you know, makes it important, relevant, because that person is relevant, and because maybe it constitutes a dimension of the topic itself. So these were some elements of Lichtenstein's tremendous reverence for classical Talmidei Chachamim, you know, that he knew, and the ones, you know, that, you know, were before his time, is all consistent with this. In that sense, very classical. I don't think that is unusual. This is something that the Rav also, the Rav used to say often, that, you know, on the one hand, he felt that his grandfather, Reb Chaim, was a revolutionary figure, revolutionary thinker, that his, you know, derech was transformative. You know, he used to say, you know, without Reb Chaim, you know, how could we teach, you know, Torah on the highest level, you know, to audiences that were exposed, that have been exposed, you know, to very sophisticated, you know, math and science and other things. It's only because of Reb Chaim's contribution. In a word, the Rav was, you know, very eloquent and certainly never shied away from crediting Reb Chaim with a tremendous contribution. I mentioned the Rimigash earlier. Whenever the Rav would encounter a shita that he particularly was enamored with, you know, he would say, oh, the forerunner of Reb Chaim. So the Rimi Gash, you know, when he said something, which he often did, that was groundbreaking, was the forerunner of Reb Chaim. You know, when the Ramban would say something, you know, on that level, forerunner of Reb Chaim, the Ravid, Rabbeinu Tam, the Shach, the Nesivas. At the same time, the Rav used to say that anybody who doesn't understand that Reb Chaim is incomprehensible and that his contribution is meaningless, you know, without the framework of other Chachmei and Mesorah, and that what he did is implicit already in and is also a continuation of everything that came before, doesn't understand anything about Limud HaTorah. Those seem to be contradictory statements. You know, the Rav would have just said that they, you know, are a little paradoxical, but mostly dialectical. And Rav Lichtenstein certainly would have said the same.
Rebbe,
this
2 minutes. Yeah.
2 minutes?
Until Meyer, unless Rebbe wants to dive in here.
Oh, okay. So we'll bring it to an end. I was going to make a point, but we'll leave it for another time. So let me just conclude the way that I began, and that is the Avos, you know, didn't die in that respect, you know, and certainly not Yaakov Avinu, you know, because of his extraordinary ability, you know, to meld the Yaakov and the Yisrael, which was his integrity, and his rejection of compartmentalization. Yaakov left children, and Yaakov and Yisrael left Talmidim, and therefore the Mustyukno of Yosef is something that was continued to the rest of Klal Yisrael as well. That is true of all the great classical Talmidei Chachamim, the men of integrity who continue to inspire us and who continue to teach us. And that is true of Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, of Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, fully as well. Thank you very much.